This is The Takeaway with Tanzina Vega from WNYC and PRX in collaboration with WGBH Radio in Boston.
Let's be honest. There's a lot of heavy news out there these days. And something I like to do to get away from current events is look for a good laugh. But here's the problem. The conversations happening about comedy today aren't always so funny.
There's a creepy PC thing out there that really bothers me.
It's a nonsense to believe that some people deserve never to be offended their whole life.
Are we going to go through everyone's history? Or are we going to get rid of every sketch that SNL has done that involves race?
We're not running for office. When is this going to end?
It feels like we can barely go a week without hearing comedians, mostly male, complain about political correctness and how there are just too many lines you can't cross. And while the lines are clearly changing at the moment, not everyone is feeling limited by these new rules.
There's people who are going through more traditional channels and people who are taking over alt spaces or people who are just making videos in their mom's house with their mom's wigs, and then all of a sudden they're like the most famous person on the planet.
As the barriers to entry to comedy shift, some women of color are finding their voices heard in ways that seemed impossible 5 or 10 years ago. All week, we're going to explore this complicated moment in comedy in our new series, Laughing in Color. We'll speak to some of the women of color stand-ups and sketch performers who have shaped the world of comedy, and we'll hear from younger comics on how the landscape is changing for them. And one question at the center of it all, whose moment is it in comedy today?
It's anybody's game.
It really belongs to people like Ali Wong.
Two people, Robin Thede and Tiffany Haddish.
This is Eddie Murphy's moment right now. Two dope queens, I love them.
Obviously there's Hannah Gadsby.
I still think it's white men.
Anybody can step up and say, I'd like the mic now, please, and have an audience.
Just some of the voices we'll be hearing from, and we want your take also. Give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE. But before we get into the modern era in comedy, we have to go back, all the way back to the 1950s.
The comedy world in that time period was very different than it is now, but it was also kind of the beginning of the framework for how we think about comedy now, which is stand-up and sketch. And so in New York at the time, there were, you know, the big clubs like the Copacabana, but there were also all these smaller clubs. And so if you were a woman, you were most likely playing at one of these.
That is...
Yael Cohen, the author of We Killed, The Rise of Women in American Comedy, and the arts and entertainment editor at The Wall Street Journal.
Yael says that a whole range of factors made it difficult for women to break out in the comedy world of the 50s and 60s.
It was the nightclub bookers. It was the audiences. It was, you know, ideas about what women could and couldn't talk about, what they should and shouldn't talk about. The idea of what it is to be a funny woman, all of those things, I think, created just all sorts of barriers.
And of course, there was one harmful line of thinking that still exists to this day.
There was the idea that women weren't funny.
In the middle of the 20th century, a small handful of female comedians did start to find success, but nearly all of those women were white. One of the few exceptions on mainstream comedy stages was the black comedian Moms Mabley. Listen to her riff on marriage on The Ed Sullivan Show in 1969.
But mom got broke, and the wintertime coming on, didn't have no money, and I married another old man. Older than the other one. Older than his birthday.
Even as more opportunities opened up for women in comedy in the following decades, the racial demographics pretty much stayed the same.
I think especially in the early and mid-90s, there was still sort of that ethos of there can only be one.
And that's...
Soraya Nadia McDonald.
She's a culture critic for ESPN's The Undefeated. Soraya says that when she was growing up, the most popular woman of color in comedy by a long shot was Whoopi Goldberg.
Okay, like my boyfriend's really cool, okay? And like he's... No, he is. He's like totally cool. And like I totally love him. But, like, you know, he, like, had a job, like, at Goodyear, you know, because, like, the Goodyear blimp, you know, would last forever. But, like, it lost air, so, like, he totally lost his job. And, like, I mean, like, I was so, like, freaked out because, like, I said to him, like, it's only, like, temporary. You know, it's, like, not going to last. But, like, then, like, today, I started freaking out because I thought, God, when does temporary become, like, permanent, you know?
Whoopi Goldberg just had this sort of, like, fabulously weird quality about her while also being just really welcoming at the same time. I remember like studying her performances and just both the physicality and the way she wrote her humor. She was just like side-splittingly funny to me.
In the 80s and 90s, women like Marcia Warfield, Wanda Sykes, and Margaret Cho were also getting their big breaks. And by the way, we'll be talking to Margaret Cho tomorrow. But throughout all of these successful comics' careers, even they've had to toe certain lines that white comics rarely needed to consider.
When it comes to women of color, and black women in particular, it's a power dynamic of like, am I going to tailor myself to the room, or am I going to expect them to come to me?
All this week, we'll be hearing from different generations of women of color comedians about how they've navigated that power dynamic when dealing with comedy's gatekeepers. We're calling it Laughing in Color. And we're going to start by talking about one of the most dominant institutions in comedy to this day.
It's Saturday Night Live!
The show has often been referred to as a boys' club. But for women of color, it's been a particularly unwelcoming environment.
You sort of realize that you as a black woman are like this scarce entity. There's all of this additional pressure on your shoulders that isn't necessarily applied to your castmates. Even as someone as beloved and popular as Maya Rudolph has talked about, you know, feeling like an outsider when her colleagues would make fun of her hair. You know, and the fact that it took longer to like straighten and basically get her camera ready than it did for her counterparts.
That's culture critic Soraya Nadia McDonald again. And while SNL frequently failed to resonate with her when she was growing up, there was another sketch show that did connect. Created by Keenan Ivory Wayans, the sketch show ran on Fox from 1990 to 1994, and it launched the careers of big-name stars including Jamie Foxx, Jim Carrey, Jennifer Lopez, and Rosie Perez. It was also where comedian Takiya Crystal Kima got her big break. One character Takiya created was a young girl named Chrissy, who created an alternate reality she called Black World.
In Black World, all the black people have the money, and your mother doesn't have to sit and stay up in the theater and clean up late at night while you have to sit and wait and be quiet, and then you're sleepy. And then when you go to school, it's no rats in the corner and no mice either. And the books are brand new and they have pictures of black people.
At the time, a character like Chrissy on In Living Color was not a character you'd necessarily expect to see on a show like Saturday Night Live. But by the early 90s, SNL did add Ellen Cleghorn to its cast, and she became the first black woman to stay at SNL as a full-time cast member for multiple seasons.
Ellen, are you all right there?
You know, you think with all the crap on TV that they would leave one or two good shows alone. But no! They had to go and take Full House away from us. I can't believe it.
I spoke with Ellen and Takiya to find out what it was like for them to headline two of the most popular sketch comedy shows of the 90s. And Takiya started out by telling me how she carved out a space for herself on In Living Color.
On the show, certainly at first, I wasn't given lead roles. I was given girl number three, woman number four. And I was able to take that and create whatever I wanted, which was more fun than being given a lead of a character that was already created by somebody else. And then more often than not, Keenan would come over and say, who is that lady? Okay, yeah, I want to see her again in this sketch or that sketch. So that was the best compliment that I could get on the show.
Let's talk about one of your characters. Chrissy was one of the girls that you played on In Living Color.
Yeah, so I'm the reason that how she got on the show in the first place, because she used me for the first audition, and they really liked that. And when for me, that was the thing that was better about In Living Color than Saturday Night is because it had a lot more black people on it.
What did Chrissy mean to you, Takiya?
Chrissy is me at 5 or 6. She's a lot of little girls that I know. I created Chrissy when I realized that my niece Robin had the same revelations at 5 or 6 that I did, that the world wasn't quite about her. And that feeling being on the precipice of acknowledging racism and how you fit into a racist world when you're a child and how you translate that is fascinating to me. So Chrissy allows me to say what I think about the world in innocence.
Ellen, you got your break on Saturday Night Live, another show that's been around for a little over 40 years now. And it's been a predominantly white show throughout its history. What was the audition process like for you in terms of really breaking into SNL?
Okay, so here's the deal. On the week before I auditioned for SNL, I was auditioning for In Living Color.
Get out of here!
And I was in the room with Jamie Foxx, and Marlon Wayans, I think, was auditioning that season. So I didn't get it. I got on the plane back, and I'm devastated that I didn't get In Living Color. I laid on my sofa, and I was talking to the Lord. I lived on the first floor, so I couldn't even jump out the window.
Well, you could.
But I could. But to what end?
When it had the same statement.
Exactly. And nobody understands. I don't think you understand the devastation unless you have been through it. And so I went ahead and picked up the phone. My agent was calling me. Okay, this is what you're going to do. You're going to go to Saturday Night Live. You're going to do your characters and blah, 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 blah. And then I went ahead and, you know, went in and auditioned. It was a different audition than In Living Color because you actually worked with others in Living Color. And then at SNL, you did your thing by yourself on the stage. And so I did two characters, my Zoraida the Page character and Queen Shaniqua. And then they called me back. And I was like, what? The first day I showed up to work, who's there? Michael Jordan. Can you imagine? And then I think on the same day, Jesse Jackson was on the show. And I was like, where the hell am I? What is this? This sorcery, this witchcraft. But it was wonderful. It was magical.
Now, you go on. You're now part of SNL. You're part of this magical moment. Were you allowed to be the characters that you wanted to be? Were you free to sort of get out there and really feel like you were on equal footing with other members of the cast?
Yep. Sink or swim, you better swim. And I got to write a lot. And I got to be Natalie Cole. They were very shocked, but they were like, okay, if you suck, you're going out, you're out the door. But yeah, I did get a lot of sketches that I wrote on, and it was it was interesting, but I did not know the total history of it, like that there had never been a black woman cast member. Like there have been women on the show like for a season or for a couple of episodes. But as a cast member and as a writer, no. And I didn't know that it was uncharted territory.
Ellen, for SNL's 40th anniversary special in 2015, you did a bit with Jerry Seinfeld. Let's take a listen to that.
I want to know, why aren't there more black women?
Oh, you mean on Saturday Night Live?
No, in general. No, because I was in the dentist the other day, and I went in, and there was only like one or two black women. I was like, what? You know? And I said, wouldn't it be really cool if like, there were more, if, like there were black women just like popping up out of the drawers and stuff?
Yeah,
really
absolutely.
Cool.
I'm for having black women everywhere.
Great, cool. So how many black women were on the Seinfeld show?
SNL has had a dearth of black women on the show. I mean, I remember, you know, just back in 2013, there was this whole brouhaha because, rightfully so, because, you know, ultimately there was no one to play Michelle Obama. Where do you think, I mean, what's the legacy here that SNL has had with black women performers?
Let me say this. So in 2007, I went back to school, got my master's degree at NYU. And then in 2015, I got my PhD. in comedy from the Performance Studies Department at NYU. So what I do is I look at humor and rhetorical functions and, you know, the way we use comedy and Black women in comedy, just people in Black people in general doing comedy. And that's my focus. But what you're asking me is, and it really kind of pains me a little bit, because we always want to point a finger at somebody so that we could blame them for whatever, whatever. In Living Color, I was on the show. I did 2 episodes before I auditioned to be a cast person. And it was a wonderful experience to work with all these Black people. Our problem, we always have to say that we are complicit in our own subjugation. We want to point to these white people who have a show and say, you're my problem, or I want to be where you are. Well, you're not going to subvert that. That's not never going to happen. Let's look at what's for real though. There's never been a Black woman in the White House. When they say, okay, in the White House, okay, in government, we've had a surge of women. This year we had so many women. No, but those were white women. We still are sorely underrepresented in the Senate, in the House of Representatives. When you want to point the finger at SNL, is that the real problem that I should be concerning myself with? I don't think so.
I agree with that. As an outsider, grew up watching Saturday Night Live, saw myself as a child on Saturday Night Live. I wrote imaginary letters to Lorne Michaels where I said, you know, let me be the first child on Saturday Night Live. But I never, you know, and when this brouhaha happened, I thought, this is their art. You can't, you know, I think it's wrong to infuse yourself in someone else's art. It's kind of ridiculous to me. It's as ridiculous as if someone had gone to Kenan and said, I'm going to demand some more white people on In Living Color, have some more Asian people on In Living Color. It's, you could, but this is my art. I'm not looking at Saturday Night Live for the Black woman. I'm not. I watched it when Garrett Morris was the only person of color on the show and, you know, missed me in the way that I missed me from everything, but didn't ever think that I was entitled to be on that show, even though I wanted to be. I never felt like I was entitled. And I think it's, you know, pretty egregious for us to, you know, protest someone's art because it doesn't include us. Make your own art. If you're missing yourself from the cultural landscape, then present your own art as a part of it.
When both of you look at the comedy world today, whose moment is it right now?
I think it's whoever takes the mic. I really do. I think it's always been that. And I think that we tend to wait for our turn. We tend to see what's out there and say, oh, that's like me. Maybe I have a chance. But I reject that notion. As I've been performing since I was, you know, 3 in my grandparents' living room. So I've never waited for someone to give me permission to take stage. I think that we're living in a very isolated, segregated society where there's movements of continued segregation and movements of inclusion, even if it's just to say we are, we want to be politically correct and say we want diversity and inclusion. But during this chaos, anyone, it's like the California election where Schwarzenegger can get in. It's anybody's game. Anybody can step up and say, I'd like the mic now, please, and have an audience.
Ellen, whose moment is it in comedy right now?
Can I make it a 2-parter?
Absolutely.
Okay, part one, this is Eddie Murphy's moment right now. Eddie done come back on the other side in the second part of my thing. There's these Black girls who are doing this stand-up comedy on the internet and on HBO. They are wonderful because they say, everything I say is valid. Every feeling that I have is valid, and we're going to talk about every single moment of my life in the same way that white folks think everything they do is spectacular. This needs to be written about. I'm like, really? You had a pizza? Okay. Let's write a movie about it. So I just think that they're validating themselves in this new media moment where all these girls on the internet, they are so funny. And the HBO Black Girl Show, comedy show, is really, really good. And the two dope queens, I love them. And you say you didn't wait for permission, but I always need permission. So they give me permission to say, oh, what you do is amazing. Just go ahead on and do that. So I just think it's wonderful that these little Black Girl Magic kids are doing their thing.
Those were comedians Ellen Cleghorn and Takiya Crystal Kima. Tomorrow on the show, I'll be talking with stand-up comedian Margaret Cho about her career and what it was like being one of the only Asian-American women in comedy during the late 80s and early 90s.
There were many women in comedy who I looked up to and who helped me actually a lot, but there were no Asian-American women and very few women of color. So it was a really isolating experience, but at the same time, it was a good test in kind of seeing how brave I could be and to really explore. Nobody told me I couldn't do it exactly. It was just that I never saw examples of people like me doing it.
Be sure to tune in for that conversation tomorrow. And as we continue our series, Laughing in Color, throughout the week, we're also hearing calls from our listeners. Whose moment do you think it is in comedy today?
Hi, my name is Christian, and I'm calling from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Tiffany Haddish and Jonathan Van Ness are two comedians that are having their moment at the top of the comedy industry right now. They've both been homeless. They've both had experiences with domestic and sexual abuse, but they've used those experiences as sort of like a jumping off point for their comedic careers.
I'm Anneke from Salt Lake City, Utah. My first thought goes to Ken Jeong, and he kind of came to prominence in a couple comedy TV shows. I really love his form of comedy, and I'm really interested in following everything he does.
Keep calling us to weigh in. Our number is 877-8-MY-TAKE, and all of these segments are going to be on a special podcast from us by the end of the week. And that's going to be in the Takeaway podcast feed or online at thetakeaway.org.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.